Sources for Tuesday, February 20th, 2007, and open a public hearing on House Bill 5043, the Department of State Lands. Ms. Soliday, I believe we left off yesterday going through some of the performance measures for the policy option packages. If you could refresh the committee's memory of where we left off. I think we were about three or four. Somewhere in that range.
Mr. Chair, Louise Soliday, Director of the Department of State Lands. We are going to start with Package 104. And once again, you're in the section of the notebook that's Policy Option Packages. Page 104 is our package that requests reclassification of five positions and an additional FTE added to one position that we have in the department. These are all current staff. We're asking for reclassifications in order to better utilize those staff to be more efficient in how we work. Part of what we want to do here is use our support staff in a more strategic manner so that our professional staff can focus on the jobs that they're assigned to do and not have to be spending time doing support work because the support staff that they have is at a level that doesn't allow them to make those assignments. There are several key performance measures that this package is tied to. Our net operating income on the land management side in particular, our revenues into the Escheated Estates program, our administrative and operational costs as a percent of our revenues, our no net loss of wetlands goal, and our customer service areas. Package 105 is the unclaimed property transfer to Treasury, and I think we talked about this performance measure. The Department of State Lands has, as a performance measure, increasing the amount of unclaimed property that's reported to the department by 3% each year under Senate Bill 67, which would transfer the department to the Office of the State Treasurer. The Treasurer's Office has projected that they will begin to see an 8% increase in those revenues over time, and you've got the actual chart that Treasury provided right on the back of that top description, along with table that actually shows the dollar amounts that they anticipate receiving as a result of that transfer. So, and they also expect that the amount of claims will go up as well, although they haven't projected the amount of that increase at this point.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, please proceed.
Package 107, which is adding the human resource assistant, and I think I talked about this also when we went through this package. We have one human resource manager at the department and no other HR staff, and so we are asking for a full-time HR assistant so that that person can focus on the support work that's necessary in the human resource arena, particularly our recruitment efforts. And that will affect a number of our performance measures. We end up with quite a few vacancies over the course of a biennium. Some of those tend to lag on for a long period of time just because we lack the staff to get through the recruitment process. So there you'll see a number of performance measures that we think this is tied to involving our land management division, including our revenues from our real estate assets, our ability to get resource inventories completed and get our management plans completed for the lands that we manage. It also affects our ability to meet our statutory timelines for getting permits issued, as well as our customer service ratings. So a number of performance measures there that are impacted by the human resource assistant position. Package 108, which is our capital improvements package. This package affects all three of our land management performance measures, including our overall revenues into the common school fund, as well as the net operating income from our land assets and the annual revenue, total annual revenue from our real estate efforts. And as I indicated yesterday when I talked about this package, there are some very specific tasks that we were trying to get done with this package, including the land appraisals and sales for the scattered parcels that we have identified for sale in our asset management plan, doing noxious weed treatments, particularly in southeast Oregon on our rangelands, doing a rangeland analysis, allowing us to analyze the data that we've collected over the last several years on our rangelands, and also doing some forest analysis, both in terms of our costs and our management of our forest lands. And we expect to treat about 1,000 acres for noxious weeds under that package.
Comment, the noxious weeds are not dandelions. They're really a severe problem in my end of the state, so I'm very happy to see the attention given to that problem.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Garrard, in addition to what we have in this package, we also have in our base budget additional noxious weed treatments. We are focused on that. We've got several problem areas that we've identified as a result of our resource inventories, and we are trying to attack those fairly aggressively. Package 110, which is our e-commerce and streamlining our internal processes packages, has an impact on all of our program areas. The goal here is to make our systems much more efficient internally, and also to make our information available electronically to the public who want to use that information for various purposes. So there are a number of performance measures, including increasing our overall revenues into the Common School Fund, our net operating income, the total annual revenues from our real estate assets, our administrative and operational costs. And you'll notice that this is one where we think that by doing this, we're actually going to see a decrease in our costs as a percent of our revenue as we begin to fully implement our e-commerce and streamlining efforts. Also will help in terms of our resource inventories and being able to get that data available online and available to our staff, as well as completing our management plans. Also continue to focus on how we meet our statutory timelines for our permitting efforts, as well as overall customer service. You'll also notice that under the other performance measures for this, we've identified that beginning in 2009, we think we're going to save about $50,000 a year in costs as a result of our e-commerce package. Package 111, which is the two positions associated with House Bill 2106, where we're trying to expedite our wetland delineation reports. As I indicated, this is holding up some of our permitting decisions, and so our goal here is to get closer to our 100% target in terms of meeting the statutory deadlines for permits, also continue to meet our no net loss of wetlands target, as well as improving our overall customer service ratings over the next couple of years. And you'll notice we've added an internal measure under this one, which is the number of wetland delineation report reviews that are completed within 120 days, and that's the target. We've indicated that we'll get these done in a time certain if we get these additional staff, so we've added an additional internal measure so that we can track that, and the goal is to get 100% of them completed within 120 days. Package 112, which is our streamlining package that's associated with House Bill 2251. We are definitely trying to meet our statutory deadlines, and not only with our removal fill permit, but also other state authorizations within those timelines, and again, trying to improve customer service, and we've had a show a target impact there of an additional 1% in customer service improvements over the term of the biennium. So we are trying to show an actual impact on customer service by delivering this streamlined process for folks who need permits related to activities and waters of the state. Package 113, which is the request for an additional auditor. We believe that having an internal auditor will help us to identify additional ways that we can improve our internal operations, hopefully help us reduce our costs. And once again, we've identified an impact to our administrative and operational costs. We think we can reduce by an additional percent with that position in place. And we may be able to do more, but we'll see when we get that person in place and what kinds of things are identified as a result of the work that they do. We've also added a new internal measure for this particular position, and that is to look at the number of internal audits that result in some sort of measurable increase in revenues into the Common School Fund. And so we've added a new internal measure that we will track starting with the 07-09 biennium.
Yes, Representative Garrard.
Louise, will the addition of this internal auditor bring you into compliance with DASC?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, it will. Package 114, which is the contract financial assistant for South SLU National Estuarine Research Reserve. This is connected to the South SLU measures. And just a reminder, we're proposing to take Measure 16 and 17 and combine them into a new 16 and renumber 18 as 17. And that new measure would track the percent of the research projects and education projects that result in some sort of assistance in problem solving related to coastal estuaries in the state of Oregon. And so our goal there is to have someone in place who is actually going to do all the reporting and all the financial tracking for all the grants and contracts that South SLU has, and they are heavily dependent on grants and contracts for their work. And right now we have a manager doing that work, and we want the manager to be able to focus on their job in terms of managing staff and have a contract and financial assistant helping with doing the financial tracking and reporting for all of those grants and contracts. And we do think on the we've added an internal measure here, which is the percent of contracts developed, administered, and completed within budget and without time extensions. And I can tell you that with South SLU, because we don't have this kind of position there, we are constantly asking for time extensions. We have difficulty meeting our reporting requirements, and so we think we'll make significant impact in that particular area. Package 115, which is the Portland Harbor package, this has the potential to directly affect revenues into the Common School Fund. As I indicated yesterday, the goal here is to hold the Common School Fund harmless and to hopefully over time recover our costs associated with the work that we'll be doing in Portland Harbor as a result of the cleanup efforts. And so we're trying to protect resources in the Common School Fund, protect those increases, annual increases that we expect in our revenues from our land assets as well. Package 116, which is our payment to provide specialists. This is the program I talked about yesterday where we've got a pot of money, but we don't have any staffing to actually get the money out on the ground to do the mitigation that needs to be done with those resources. And so we've got a specific performance measure, which is key performance measure 12, which is related specifically to getting this position. And if we have this position, we expect that we will meet that target 100% of the time. That is, we will get the money out on the ground within a year after receiving it. And right now, we're or sitting with money that's been in that account for longer than 2 years. And so we want to get to the point where we've got all that money out on the ground and continue to get money out on the ground within a year after we receive it.
After you take care of the backlog, approximately how much money is going to come into the account each year for the party to basically determine how to use?
And Mr. Chair, that's a variable amount depending on how many permit applications we have that have those small impacts, but I would say on the order of $400,000 to $600,000 a year comes in generally. Could be more or less depending on activity, but that's a fairly good ballpark, I think. Let's see. Package 117, which is the last package, which is the request for an additional staff in our asset management plan area, affects all of our land management targets. And as I indicated yesterday when I was talking about the other POP that's related to the asset management plan, we have identified a number of targets within the asset management plan, and we've laid out for you in Part C on the form here the things that we'd like to accomplish with this particular position, which is getting several of our special area management plans completed, getting evaluations done, and getting land board approval to sell about 20% of our scattered forest lands, getting completed either our investment or disposal strategies for our lands that are identified as industrial, commercial, and residential, completing transfer of 36% of the remaining in-lieu lands that we are due from the federal government, completing the sale or exchange of 20% of our scattered rangelands that we've identified. And I would expect that if we are successful in selling off some of the forest lands and rangelands in the 07-09 biennium, which we intend to do, we will probably see somewhere on the order of $2 to $3 million in additional revenues from those land sales into the Common School Fund.
Yes.
Louise, is this where the Elliott Forest would come under?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, the Elliott State Forest is an asset that's managed under the asset management plan, but remember that the department itself does not manage the Elliott State Forest. We have a contract with the Department of Forestry who does that for us under contract.
You have some influence, obviously.
Mr. Chair and Representative Girard, we do.
I would hope, Mr. Chair, that there would be an emphasis put on reevaluating what the present formula is for the Elliott so that you can look forward to perhaps increasing that revenue.
Mr. Chair and Representative Girard, and I'll take this opportunity to respond to a couple of things that were said yesterday during the public testimony. I just sort of put that in context. We are currently harvesting about 27 million board feet a year from the Elliott State Forest. We're selling that much. How much gets harvested depends on when operators actually want to harvest. They have up to 3 years once a sale is sold to actually do the harvesting. We believe that number is only going to go down under the current management regime, and that's because we are managing under a habitat conservation plan for spotted owls, but we are without a habitat conservation plan for marbled murrelets, which are also listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, as the spotted owls are. And so we are managing murrelets under a take avoidance strategy, which means that before we do sales, we go in, the Department of Forestry goes in and surveys for owls, and then we manage, or surveys for murrelets, and then we go in and manage to avoid those murrelets where we find them. That has caused the adjustment of several potential sales in the forest and caused us to set aside more of the forest to protect those murrelets. We have been in the process of developing a habitat conservation plan for murrelets, and we are on a timeline to try and get that habitat conservation plan in place by mid-2008. If we are successful in doing what we're hoping to do under the habitat conservation plan, the 27 million board feet we think will increase to about 40 million board feet per year. Yesterday, during the public testimony, you heard Bob Ragoon from the Douglas Timber Operators talk about modeling that they asked the Department of Forestry to do that showed that we could harvest 50 to 55 million board feet per year. What wasn't said yesterday is that that modeling assumed that marbled murrelets are not listed and that we are doing nothing in terms of managing to avoid take of marbled murrelets. That's not our real world. Our real world is that we do have murrelets, they are listed, and we can't operate under a strategy that ignores that fact. And if we did, we would put the common school fund, the revenues off of that forest, at great risk. So we are eager to get a habitat conservation plan in place. We believe that we will be allowed to harvest more timber throughout that forest under a habitat conservation plan. And we are also, that habitat conservation plan is intended not just to cover owls and murrelets, but a list of about 18 other species that are candidate species or at-risk species that have been identified either by the Department of Fish and Wildlife or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or NOAA Fisheries. So we're trying to cover a number of species that potentially could be listed in the future so that if they are, we're already covered, we already have a plan in place, and we're not going to have to reduce harvest again to adjust to another listing.
So 40 million board feet basically is kind of the top line at this point.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garrard, given the current listings, we believe that's we're pushing, I think we're going to have a hard time convincing the Fish and Wildlife Service to get from 27 to 40 million board feet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Plant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On those same sort of points, are the delays essentially that will take us all the way through 07 mid 08 all on the other end, or with more resources on our end, could we accelerate it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Clem, it's sort of the normal process. We have resources to do. We've had a grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for the Department of Forestry staff who've been working on the HCP, and it's just the time it takes time to develop a draft. You have to do an environmental impact statement. We're close to having a draft environmental impact statement that will go out in the next couple of months for public review, and we have to do a final impact environmental impact statement, and that goes to the services for, and then there'll be some negotiations in early 2008, and the goal is to get a habitat conservation plan signed by the middle of next year.
Someone has management authority over you over that management. Okay. The shorthand is that you have some management authority over how the Forest Service manages the Elliott, and someone has management authority over you on how you manage the Elliott.
Mr. Chair, by constitution, by Oregon constitution, it is the state land board that is charged with setting policies on what are called the common school fund trust lands. The non-trust lands are directed by statute. The trust lands are directed by constitution. And the constitution says that the land board is to manage those lands to provide the greatest permanent benefit consistent with sound techniques of land management. So there's a balancing act there, but certainly the focus is on generating revenue from those lands to finance public education, and it always has been, and it always will be, because that's what the Constitution says. I certainly report to the land board. They are my bosses. However, I want to say, while I appreciate people sort of trying to separate me from the land board decisions, I support the land board's decisions, particularly with regard to management of the Elliott State Forest. Having worked on Endangered Species Act efforts for the current governor and the former governor, I know how difficult it is to operate in a world where you've got endangered species listings, and so it is a very tough thing to sort of figure out how you're going to continue to generate revenue in light of endangered species listings that affect your land management activities. So there is a land board that directs how we're going to manage the Elliott State Forest. The Board of Forestry also has a role because they own 9% of the Elliott State Forest, so it is those two governing boards who set the policy direction that the staffs carry out. We do have a contract with the Department of Forestry to manage those lands for us, and that contract is based on policy direction set by the land board.
Well, Ms. Holliday, all I was trying to say is I was not trying to divide you from the land board, considering you the same, but both you and the land board are subject to federal authority.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And, you know, as everybody knows, back in 1859 when this land was set aside, there wasn't such a thing as Endangered Species Act, and I don't think anybody actually envisioned it. And so we're dealing in a different day and a different era, and we've got to recognize that. And this is a public forest, and so there are the public watches how it is managed, which is distinct from how private forests are managed. And I don't think we can ignore the fact that we've got endangered species, and we've got to figure out how we're going to manage with them on the forest over the long term.
Representative Dingfelter has a question.
Thank you, Louise. I had a question about the navigability. It hasn't come up, I know. That hard to raise this, but I wanted to know if there are any studies going on right now. What's the status of navigability as far as some of the rivers? And this has been controversial in the past, but certainly this also affects revenue for the Common School Fund.
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Dingfelter, we do have a navigability study underway in the Rogue River currently. We expect that we actually have a draft of the study completed. It's at the Department of Justice's office for review. We expect that that'll go out for public review here in the next couple of months, and we are looking at probably a land board decision on that navigability determination sometime in late this year or early next year. We have another half dozen rivers that have been petitioned for studies that are on a list, and some of them date back to 1997, and we are doing those one at a time. As we get done with one, we pick up the next one on the list. And probably the most recent petition we had in the door was for a two-mile section of Three Rivers, which is a tributary to the Nestucca over on the coast, and we just completed the preliminary process and have recommended to the land board that it be added to the list at the bottom of the list. And the governor asked me at the land board meeting when I thought we'd get to that study, and I told him I thought it would be about 2020 under the current process before we would get to that particular river.
Follow up as far as for the Rogue, Louise, is this just certain portions? Because certain portions are already scenic. And, you know,
yeah, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Dingfelter, the Rogue, the tidally influenced area of the Rogue is already under state ownership, and so this study picks up at, I want to say, about River Mile 55 or so, and goes up to 100. It's about a 100-mile stretch of the river.
And one more follow-up. As far as revenue, I mean, have you, as part of the navigability studies, do you also have to do sort of a revenue analysis and see what, and I'm assuming all those landowners would have to be noticed, and then they would start being charged. Is that how the process works?
Well, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Dingfelter, we do notify all the landowners. We give them we send the study to them. We give them the opportunity. We actually hold a land board meeting in the area where the navigability determination is going to be made. If those landowners are utilizing the state lands, then we work to get them into compliance. If they have a boat dock, we have a registration process, which is $25 a year. If they have other uses, it's usually based on the square footage or the kind of use based on the fees that are established in our rules.
Representative Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little bit new to all the things you're talking about. So once the land board determines something's navigable, this is that deal where then the state owns a certain amount of the riverbank and people can use it freely, or the public, or how's this working?
Mr. Chair and Representative Klum, that's correct. When we make a navigability determination, what we do is assert ownership to the submerged and submersible lands, so anything below the ordinary high water mark in those areas. And so if people have structures that are anchored to the beds and banks, charge a fee for the use of those lands depending on what it is that it's being utilized for and what the size of the structure is. The I will say this, it really doesn't change too much the public's ability to utilize waterways in Oregon. We had a major attorney general opinion that came out in 2005 that talked about the public's right to use the waterways in Oregon, and that right is a fairly broad right under existing laws and the public trust doctrine.
Representative Clem, sometime when Representative Dingfelter and I are cruel to you, we'll suggest to the Speaker that for a task force on navigability,
that you appoint you.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up.
He's scared him now.
It is cruel.
Is the Umpqua River on the list already navigable, or what's
Mr. Chair and Representative Clem, the Umpqua, the South Umpqua is on the list, and okay, so the tidally influenced area, so up to River Mile 28 is already done, and we have a study request for a portion of the South Umpqua.
Right.
Yeah.
Not the main stem or the main.
Correct.
Representative Garrard and then Senator Nelson.
Just a quick word to my fellow colleagues that, as Louise will attest, there are few things that state board is involved in that will become any more controversial than this particular act. When your constituents have built around or on lakes and some of the small streams, etc., riprock is a very difficult thing for landlubbers to understand when they go out and pull rocks out of the middle of the lake and pile them up in front of their property to keep the property from washing away. So they have a very difficult time understanding why they should be pay a license fee to do that, because they, in essence, see that as protecting their property, and those are just rocks in the water. So.
Oh, Mr. Chair and Representative Garrard, well, first of all, the rocks were taken off of state land, and secondly, they were placed back on state land, and therefore, in order to generate revenue to the Common School Fund, we charge people for the use of our lands.
Follow. And Louise spent a great deal of time in Klamath Falls on this particular issue, and the department did a very good job of trying to educate the people. So I just want to point that out, that you really do try to educate, but that's a very difficult issue for a property owner. It is, by the way, supposed to be disclosed by real estate when they purchase the property, but rarely is. So it comes as a surprise to most property owners.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Gordon, I think we've got a lot of historic uses that we have not charged for in the past, and we are trying to get people in compliance with the law. We're trying to do it by sending people to come in and deal with us early as opposed to dealing with us after we've filed a trespass charge against them. So we are trying to work with folks to get them in compliance with the statute. We are not trying to retroactively collect fees. We want to get them in compliance moving forward, and we've got a staff and a process in place where we're trying to do that all over the state. The next place we're going to be is on Snake River. So those of you in eastern Oregon, be aware that you're probably going to hear from some people next year as we try to get people on the Snake River in compliance with the statute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The red flag is risen.
I was just going to say, there enough water under the bridge here? I didn't like to hear that last week. That's going to be Walla County is where that's going to come from.
See, as long as it's Southern Oregon, it's okay.
Any water problems. On another subject, when you're talking about all these employees that you want to hire, it seems to me that a lot of them, there's a fair amount of skill level involved in some of these employees. Is there a job market available for those people, and how do you anticipate handling that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, or Senator Nelson, some of these positions are easier to fill than others. I know, the internal auditor position, for instance, we tried to do that through contract and found it extremely difficult to find anybody to do that. that. I don't know whether we're going to be any more successful with a full-time permanent position there to hire someone into, but I think it gives us a better chance of doing that. So it just it depends on the position, how difficult it is. I will say with our natural resource coordinators, which is sort of the base of our positions, our natural resource coordinators, we've had fairly good success getting some good quality people. We've been able to steal some people from some other agencies, which is always good because they know the state system coming in and have been dealing with natural resources. And so I hopefully we're going to be successful in finding the right kinds of folks that we need to do the positions, to do the work that needs to be done.
How do you always get the committees in trouble? I mean, if we approve some of these things, then you have vacancies and they're not filled. Is that what always causes conflict within when we look at budgets for the following year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I don't think that causes conflicts. I think it causes difficulties for agencies because the work is still there and it needs to get accomplished. They work around it as best they can.
Are they able to use that money then for another position, or how does that?
Agencies will use that if they find they're having difficulties in recruiting for that position. They'll strategize on how to deal with that vacancy. They may have to change the position a little bit, so they might be able to use those vacancy savings for that. They may use it to contract, get temporary help in, so it becomes more flexible for them. You know, the longer they go without a position, the more limitation goes unspent for that, gives them a little more. And it could carry over into the next biennium.
At this point, I'm not going to be able to keep the promise and have this be over by 9:15, since we had the diversion of navigability.
Yeah. So I guess at this point we are through the performance measures for the policy option packages. We just need to talk just briefly, or have you present just briefly on the continuous improvement. And also on some suggestions that you might want to put forward in terms of our 2% requirement in reductions,
so,
which I think is pretty easy in your general fund area.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I actually did that last week generally, but I'll do it more specifically today. And if you look in your notebooks, the sheet just before the policy option package tab, you will see a chart in which we laid out our quality improvements and efficiency concepts. So it's the page just before the policy option packages piece. It's the last sheet in the priorities, reductions, and efficiency section. And we had proposed three areas where we think we can forego some resources and still continue to do the job that we need to do. And those areas include our costs of our attorney general fees. We have begun to implement some things to try and reduce our attorney general fees that we've been paying. We've been training our staff to do more of the drafting of documents instead of having the attorney general's office do the drafting. We ask them to do the review instead of drafting those documents. We've also been training particularly our field staff in skills on mediation and negotiations, so that hopefully we're able to resolve more of the conflicts that we have with landowners and permit holders out there lower down in the process, earlier in the process, so that they don't get elevated to a contested case situation. And so there's some things that we've been doing there to try and reduce our AG costs, and we're already starting to see some of those costs go down on a monthly basis. And so we've proposed some savings on the order of about $250,000, which is just under 20% of our total AG cost for the biennium. The second area where we've identified some savings as a result of some technology improvements that we've made in the unclaimed property section, most of the holders are now reporting electronically. It used to be that they sent something in the mail to us, and we used to have to hire temporary staff to do all the data entry to get all of that information into our computer system. Well, with electronic reporting, we now download the reports that they send to us, and they automatically drop into our system. And so we have a lot less in terms of actual manual data entry that needs to be made. And so we are proposing that we can reduce our costs in that area by 35%, $35,000, which is 50% of the cost of temporary services that we've used for that in the past. And then the third area is we, in this current biennium, took over management of the Department of State Lands building from the Department of Administrative Services. And that has saved us money in two areas. One is our janitorial services have come in at a lower cost than they were when we were the building was being managed by DAS, and our contract services, because we are now contracting directly with our contractors instead of going through the DAS process, and that's resulted in some savings. And so we have identified about $55,000 in savings that we think will continue into future biennium, which is about 9% of the total cost of maintaining our building. And then we've identified some future opportunities, which I've talked about earlier. One is to continue to look at how we streamline the permit process, and we hope over time that we will continue to see savings in that area. We already have saved quite a bit of money. We think maybe as much as $1 million in savings just by putting our public review process online instead of mailing out to everybody who wanted to review permit applications and those sorts of things. We no longer do that. We put all those permits online, applications online. People can review them and comment by email or snail mail or picking up the phone and calling us. But it has saved considerable resources in the agency already. We're continuing to look for opportunities to do that. The new technologies, the e-permitting, as we've indicated, we think that starting in 2009, that's going to start to save us an additional $50,000 a biennium in terms of reduced use of paper, reduced copying, those sorts of things. And then finally, as I indicated earlier, we are going to do a review of our statutes and our rules to see if there are areas that are obsolete or areas that we can rework to streamline processes for folks, and that may result in some savings as well.
Any questions from the committee?
So, this one, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you said yesterday you had 3,200 billable hours for attorney's fees, or am I wrong?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, as part of a package, we have a request for 3,200 hours for the Portland Harbor package, and that's because we are going to begin the cost allocation negotiations process with the Lower Willamette Group, the Blue Water Group, and other companies. And we need an attorney who's in there representing the interest of the department in those negotiations.
I'm trying to figure out. That's
just one package. There's many more hours in the total budget.
$3,200 attorneys. I'm just trying to think. What do attorneys usually bill in a year? 2,000 hours?
Well, that particular
biennium.
It would be, yeah.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, that 3,200 hours, we think, is about a three-quarter FTE for the biennium. It's for the biennium. It's not for a year. Yeah.
It's about $1,600.
That's correct.
Any additional questions? Representative Klein, you looked like you had a question.
I do, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to decide whether this is the right venue or time. If not, just let me know. I have some questions related to some of the numbers. I'm looking over in the governor's recommended, whatever you call this, document.
Yes.
Yeah. And, for example, like on the human resource support staff person, I see that the total expense of that over the biennium is like $112,000. That's one FTE. In the implementing RIPETs, it's one FTE, it's $361,000. I assume there's something I'm missing that's not you know, that they get paid that much more, but there's other factors.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clem, in the RIPID package, there is $200,000 for a contract with the Institute of Natural Resources to make available electronically some resource information, location of wetlands, threatened and endangered species, other resources of concern that we want folks to try to avoid when they're doing removal fill activities in waters of the state. So there's a contract package to that. The staff position in that particular package is, I want to say it's about $150,000. It is a higher level position than the human resource assistant in the other package that you were referring to.
Yeah, just one follow-up.
Yes.
The other one, for some reason, I guess I don't see it in my little policy option package tab, but 109, CAFR, CFR, audit rank line, and that was one where I saw, you know, 100 general fund, although the rank there was higher than the human resource, but it's a total, you know, smaller amount, and I couldn't find my paperwork on it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clem, the package 109, the request for general funds was denied as a part of the governor's recommended budget, so it's zeroed out. We actually have made a request at the table yesterday at the end of my presentation. We are requesting the $100,000 limitation in other funds because it is a very real expenditure. We put off doing work this biennium that we otherwise would have done had we not had that expense. So we are requesting other funds instead of general funds to pay for that.
Madam Vice Chair.
Yeah.
Will the other funds come out of the Common School Fund then?
Madam Vice Chair and Representative Clem, that's correct.
So, just one more. If I could, will there be a sheet then, the specific to kind of like these for 109? 109's not in here, obviously, because it didn't make it past the governor, but now that it is going to be back on the table, will there be something that describes exactly what that is? And
it's in the small notebook. If you go back right past 117, you'll see some other requests.
Oh, other, yeah, okay.
And if you go just past that, you'll actually see the 109 package there.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
One quick question.
Yeah, Senator Nelson.
Yes. Do you have any vacancies now from previous in your budget?
Madam Vice Chair and Senator Nelson, we always have vacancies. I can't think of any time when we haven't had vacancies. So there's always vacancies at the office. A couple I can think of right now, we are advertising for our seasonal positions for this coming season. We have a couple of vacancies at South Slough right now. We are just in the process of filling our last vacancy in the Wetlands and Waterways Conservation Division. It'll be the first time since I've been there that we actually are at full staff in that division. And so, you know, we've got turnover that goes on. So we do have recruitments that are underway currently for a couple of vacant positions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The CAFR auditor, and then we have a new proposal for an internal auditor as well, but they're two different people doing two different things.
Madam Vice Chair and Representative Clem, they are two very different things. The CAFR audit is an audit that's done by the Secretary of State's office, audit division, and it looks, it's an external it's a team of people who come in and audit our accounts, and we've gone through two of those one in 2005, one in 2006. We'll have one every year. They look at different accounts each year, and so they've got a system set up where they look at those accounts. An internal auditor actually looks at our internal operations, and it's not just financial. It looks at how we process unclaimed property, how we process escheated estates, how we process permits, and so they're looking for how we get more efficiencies out of our internal operations.
And Representative Clem, just having spent a session on the Audits Committee, one of the takeaway messages for me was that the agencies that did have internal auditors had a much more, let's say, I don't know if I want to say efficient, but certainly efficient and less problems that the external auditor would find. Often what we found was agencies that didn't have an internal auditor the external audit picked up things that should have been picked up years ago by the internal auditor, and unfortunately ended up costing the state way more in the long run. So I am a big proponent of internal auditors for agencies from what I've seen. And is this the first time that an internal auditor will be at department at the department?
Madam Vice Chair, that's correct. And I'll say this. You know, when you're going through a major audit like we did with the CAFR audit, you don't know what's going to come up. I think, to our credit, we've had one reportable condition in both of those audits, and it's the same reportable condition. It's the one I talked about yesterday, and that's the needing to reconcile our unclaimed property balance that's in the state financial management system with the system that we use for unclaimed property. And we have been working on that for a couple of years. We're continuing to work on it. We're now down to about $3 million out of balance. That's a little over 1% of the total amount that's in there. So the reconciliation has the work that we've done already has gotten that down to an amount that's manageable, and we're going to continue to look for how we can reconcile the rest of it. Some of it we are never going to be able to do because we don't have the records going back far enough to do it, but we'll continue to work to get to as close to being reconciled as we can, and then do monthly reconciliation so that we don't get into that situation again. Questions, please? Okay. Well, the chair wanted me to remind everybody that tomorrow we're doing the state parks, right?
Correct.
And Louise, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Not that I can think of, Madam Vice Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Well, with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5043.